Big thanks for Marty Biron for joining us to give some insight into the goaltending play at the World Cup of Hockey. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview we did earlier in the show with Paul Wiesek, it'll be available for download on iTunes. You can find us also on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As we've been doing all morning, we head back to the MTS Iceplex where Brian Munns and Paul Edmonds have a special guest with them.
Thanks, guys. And Paul and I are pleased to be joined by a special guest, Tyler Myers, joining us as we are now less than an hour away from the players finally getting onto the ice this morning. It's 11 o'clock is when the on-ice portion will begin, and Tyler, I'll ask the first question. Did you pull the plug this morning?
No. We were group one, so we were ready to, we were all here at 6:30, so we were ready to go, and we would have much rather been starting on time than having to wait. So the fact that it's getting going here is nice, and looking forward to getting the first day going.
Knee and hip surgeries leading up to the summer and then through the summer. Was it a summer of recuperation for you?
Yeah, more so with the hip. The knee was really minor. I was back within a couple weeks with that. So the hip is, you know, was a longer one. It was a typical hockey hip. A bunch of the guys have had it done the past few years that I know of. So it was definitely a different summer, but, you know, one that I'm happy that I got done when I did. And I'm feeling, you know, 100% coming into camp.
FanFest here today, yourself, Brian Little, Sean Mathias, we're out on stage already. You got a chance to see some of the fans outside. It's pretty remarkable what's going on outside the building as you guys get ready to go to work here today, isn't it?
Yeah, especially, you know, when it's, you know, cloudy, a little bit of a rainy day, it shows how much the fans care and support the team. So it's really nice to see them out there and to, you know, share some interviews with them as well. So it's always nice to see the fans support in Winnipeg.
We'll let you get your gear on. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Tyler Myers with us here. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns. We'll continue on with you as FanFest continues here today at MTS Iceplex on TSN 1290.
Thanks, guys. You're back here in TSN 1290 studios. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. We've been talking about the World Cup of Hockey as well as Winnipeg Jets training camp. And now it's our turn to get our licks in at the performance of Team USA. So, you know, we've talked about it throughout the show, about who deserves the majority of the blame for that woeful performance for Team USA. And certainly Dean Lombardi, you know, he didn't back down on his decision-making for building this roster. He said, yeah, we can't compete with Team Canada, so we have to try and go about it in a different manner. The problem with that logic is, if they had gone about it with on a talent basis, they would have, should have been able to get at least to the semifinals, where they wouldn't have faced Team Canada in the semifinals. You know, you take care of business, if they take care of business against Team Europe and
right.
the Czechs,
yeah.
they're through to the semifinals. Whereas then they wouldn't play Canada into the finals, and if they lose to Canada in the finals, nobody's talking about this terrible performance. So, I mean, it was such a, it seems like it was such a short-sighted roster decision-making process by Dean Lombardi, by Brian Burke, by John Tortorella, if he's involved in the decision-making, I have to believe he is to some extent. It just seems like they set themselves up to fail and put themselves behind the eight ball to start.
Guys, there isn't one reason why the U.S. failed at the 2016 World Cup. I would love to sit here and blame John Tortorella. Trust me, I would love to. But it wasn't just on John Tortorella. I disagree with John Tortorella's decision to bench Buff during the first game in favor of Jack Johnson, who he coaches in Columbus. But that wasn't the reason why the U.S. failed. As you mentioned, Drew, the U.S. should have beaten Team Europe, or certainly on paper, they're a better team than Team Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're certainly a better team than the Czech Republic, especially when you consider the forwards that the U.S. has at their disposal. So when I look at how the U.S. played, and let's be honest, the U.S. has struggled at all international best-on-best tournaments at the senior level since really the 1996 World Cup.
Yeah, they've never won anything since then.
And sure, in 2010, they won the silver medal. So, I mean, we can't take everything away from them. But when you look at USA Hockey right now, I don't necessarily buy that the U.S. can't compete with Canada when it comes to skill. And when you look at some of the good young players that are coming up for Team USA, Johnny Gaudreau is one of them, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, I look at it like all of these reasons are just excuses why the U.S. didn't do well, guys. And when you look at some of the players that the U.S. had, sure, Drew, I agree, Phil Kessel should have been there. Tyler Johnson should have been there. On defense, I probably would have picked Justin Falk, for example. But when you look at how they played, at the end of the day, it's the players on the ice that didn't get it done. Team USA, Drew, still has Patrick Kane, the reigning leading goal scorer in the NHL, points leader in the NHL. Joe Pavelski, one of the top goal scorers over the last few seasons in the NHL. Zach Parise, excellent player. You can go down the list. James Van Riemsdyk, great player. The U.S. still has an amazing collection of players. Ryan Suter is one of the best all-around defensemen in the NHL. Corey Schneider, Jonathan Quick, both excellent goaltenders. Throw in Ben Bishop as well. He's a good goaltender. I don't necessarily buy that the U.S. didn't have a good team and somehow they were this massive underdog to Team Canada. I think they just didn't get it done. And when you look at, don't get me wrong, I think Canada has more depth and is a better team. But you guys, we're talking about single game situations here where they did not get the job done. And it was embarrassing for Team USA that they couldn't even beat the Czech Republic in their third game.
No, like I'll give them a pass for that game because it was meaningless. And then, you know, the only thing they were playing for is pride.
I don't think it was
that
meaningless.
Well, sure it was. I mean, they weren't going to advance to the semifinals at that point in time.
Well, is the bronze medal game meaningless?
No.
Because they don't seem to show up for that either.
Well, Canada doesn't show up for bronze medal games either. It's because it's either gold or bust at that point in time. But to your point, Ezzy, I mean, so you scratched Dustin Byfuglien in the first game. Which, I mean, nobody in the NHL is picking Jack Johnson over Dustin Byfuglien.
Well, it didn't make sense, Drew, because Dustin Byfuglien was paired up with Ryan Suter on the top pair. So he goes from the top pair to the bench. It just doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. And then the second game, you have Brandon Dubinsky on the team. And why do you have Brandon Dubinsky on the team?
Truculence.
Truculence and to disturb Sidney Crosby.
Sure.
Because that's what Brandon Dubinsky does very well. He's known as, you know, he gets under Sidney Crosby's skin. And then you bench Brandon Dubinsky for that second game in exchange for Kyle Palmieri, because then you decide you can go skill against skill against Canada?
They put Kyle Palmieri in because they wanted more speed. He's faster than Brandon Dubinsky.
Right.
But the point is, Drew,
but why is Brandon Dubinsky on the team if it's not to disrupt Sidney Crosby?
Right. They made some very curious coaching decisions. But at the end of the day, Dave, this team just wasn't as good as Canada. They weren't as good as Europe. They're not as good as Sweden, Russia. This isn't a very good team. And they just, at the end of the day, on the ice, didn't get the job done.
One other thing about the first game against Team Europe. You know, they were lethargic through that first game. They were sleepwalking through that first game against Team Europe, and they lost. Do you not really think, knowing what you know about Dustin Byfuglien, having seen him play for, you know, 5 years now, when Dustin Byfuglien is geared up and he's excited, because we know how excited and how honored he was to represent Team USA, do you not think on his first shift in that game against Team Europe, he goes and lays a devastating body check against whatever Team Europe player, and he makes his presence known and he gets the American players into the game immediately? We saw it the first exhibition game he ever played here, where he got into a fight on his first shift after he creamed, I think it was Grant Clitson going back 5 years ago in that exhibition game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's just such bizarre decision-making by John Tortorella that leaves you scratching your head, saying, what were you doing? What were they doing from the start with this roster selection, and what were they doing with the game management?
It may be time for Team USA to have a summit. Because if you're, you know, like, it is curious. I mean, you, when you leave that much skill behind in the idea of keeping it truculent, and the reality is this, you can't just beat one team and then, you know, okay, you're already in the finals. You have to beat all the other teams. Now, obviously, having said that, if you can beat Canada, you most likely can beat most of the other teams. But clearly, this team just wasn't well put together, wasn't prepared for what they had to do. And I think really what it comes down to is maybe not a lack of preparation, but I think they just were overconfident. I think they played well, relatively speaking, in that first game against Canada in the preseason pre-tournament games. And then I think they just took Europe for granted. I think they just literally just overlooked Europe and were already thinking about the Canadian game. Right. And they're like, hey, this game is in the bag. I mean, again, the decision to leave Byfuglien, regardless of what happened on that Duchesne goal against Canada, it was a curious decision at best to leave
Byfuglien. Well, because the Canada game against the U.S., the U.S. should really go with the mentality that that game against Canada truly doesn't matter. Because they can lose that game as long as they take care of business against the Europeans and the Czechs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if we beat Canada, great. So we're first in the pool. If we lose to Canada, no big deal. We'll have beaten Europe. We'll have beaten the Czechs. We're through to the semifinals. We won't see Canada again until the finals, assuming both teams get there. So they just so badly, like, they made their entire tournament out to be that relatively meaningless round-robin game. And so when they got smoked, when they sleptwalked through the Team Europe game, all of a sudden what should have been a relatively meaningless game was the most important game, and we know that they can't match up talent-wise. So their problem was they focused on the wrong opponents. Canada is a bonus if you beat them. You have to beat Europe and the Czechs, and that's just right. On John Tortorella. That's his fault as a coach to not understand the situation. I'm sorry. He's not a very good hockey coach.
Well, when you look at Team USA, and I said it at the top of the segment, I mean, they still have an abundance of talent. And Patrick Kane, he was not playing at his top level, at least the Patrick Kane that you expect. And you needed more offense from the top players. Joe Pavelski, Derek Stepan, Blake Wheeler, of course, of the Winnipeg Jets. Not saying that Blake Wheeler or any of these other players didn't give their best effort or didn't have chances. But I just think that, put it this way, guys, even if Phil Kessel was there and even if Tyler Johnson was there, do they still beat Canada? I don't think they do.
No, I don't think they do either, but they don't have to worry about beating Canada until the finals.
Sure, I know what you're saying, Drew. They had to beat Europe. They had to beat Czech Republic. They needed to beat the teams that were better than them, that weren't as good as them.
The tournament was set up for them to effectively get a bye to the semifinals. The tournament was set up for Canada and the U.S. to get a bye to the semifinals.
I'm
going to
say, as an aside, Drew, if the World Cup of Hockey is going to take place in 2020 with the continental teams, Team Europe and Team North America,
yeah,
they have to switch this format and at least allow more teams into the quarterfinals or have a quarterfinals or give a team a bye to the semifinals. Because as far as I'm concerned, you shouldn't be knocked out of the tournament if you lose two games.
I don't disagree, or you go to, if you're going to do a 16 tournament, I don't know why you need two pools of a round robin. You can do one pool and do a more extensive round robin. I mean, there's no reason why they had three pre-tournament games. You have the same number of pre-tournament games
as you do.
Well, I mean, it's just the money.
It's a money grab.
You have at most two pre-tournament games, maybe even one.
Do one in a scrimmage, for God's sakes. I mean, you don't even need three pre-tournament games. That's just greed is the only reason they wanted to do
that. I think they'll look at that. I'm in favor of having a best of three final, but I would also be in favor of having a best of three semi and a best of five final. That might be too much hockey, but needless to say, I think the fact that Team North America finished 2-1 and didn't get to the semifinals is a problem that I think the NHL and the NHLPA are aware of.
I can tell you who wouldn't want to have best of five GMs, because they wouldn't want their players kind of getting into a heated rivalry.
And I don't think best of five it would ever happen. I think they're going to keep it at best of three.
Best of three is fine. It's unique. It's different.
But you have to do something, I agree, to make the round robin more meaningful
and
less blink of an eye, you're done before you know what's hit you.
Have a quarterfinal and let all eight teams play.
There's not eight teams in the tournament. So there are. Yeah, so there are. Pardon me.
Sorry,
I miscounted. You're right. There are eight teams in the tournament.
But you know what I mean? It's just pretty ridiculous because, as you said, those pre-tournament games, even though they were exciting, especially the ones between Canada and the USA and North America and Team Europe, they just didn't matter. And I think, if anything, people want to see now more teams in those later rounds. So.
Sure. Make the games more meaningful than just pre-tournament games and round-robin games. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll head back out to the Iceplex. We'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens. They open training camp, and they already have controversy between their coach and their captain.
Montreal controversy?
It's amazing. I know. Hard to believe. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We have some news out of Pittsburgh Penguins training camp, where the Penguins have announced that goaltender Matt Murray, he was the starting goaltender for Team North America at the World Cup, goaltender Matt Murray will be sidelined 3 to 6 weeks as a result of a broken hand he sustained during the round robin of the World Cup. So a big blow to the Penguins, but a good thing that they did not end up trading Marc-Andre Fleury this offseason, as they will need his services for certainly the start of the NHL season, probably for the first month of the season, as goaltender Matt Murray out 3 to 6 weeks with a broken hand. The segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You know, Drew, as you know, we have fans all across the city.
Yes.
And we got a tweet about 20 minutes ago from at Boffa Jones Jets, saying that he just sat beside Richie at Bernstein's Deli.
Who?
So,
who?
My question is, how is Richie listening to Illegal Curve like he says he does every Saturday morning?
Uh-huh.
Now that he's not on the show, if he's at Bernstein's Deli right now.
I assume he's just got a transistor radio with him or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Does they still make transistor radios?
I believe that's what the kids are using these days, yeah.
Okay, yeah, transistor radios. Okay, good to know.
Richie better be listening to that podcast.
Okay, let's head back to the MTS Iceplex where Brian Munns and Paul Edmonds have another special guest with them.
Thanks, guys. Everybody out here looking forward to the top of the hour is coming up at 11 o'clock. Paul, everybody will finally take to the ice, and we're joined by a special guest right now. Manitoba's own Quinton Howden is in his first Jet camp. Quinton, quick thoughts on FanFest here today. You've had a chance to go out and meet a lot of people.
Yeah, it was fun. It's cold. I can't believe that they're still standing out there, but I guess they're used to it here.
You're not?
When I was growing up, I guess so, but over the last few years, I've kind of gotten away from it. So, yeah, I got to go buy some winter clothes.
Quinton, growing up, of course, an East man playing hockey there. You were an offensive player, Western Hockey League as well. What are Winnipeg Jets fans going to see as to what type of player you are now at the National Hockey League?
Yeah, I just want to show my work ethic. You know, over the last few years, my speed has been my asset, and, you know, I've kind of contributed in a role down there in Florida. So, you know what, I'll play whatever role they need here. You know, I just kind of want to come into camp and try not to be too nervous, but show what I got and kind of prove that I can play at this level.
Last couple of days, you've gone through the off ice. You went through skating drills yesterday. Now you guys finally get to play with some pucks out here today.
Yeah, I think everybody's glad yesterday's done with now. Looking forward to getting on the ice and get shooting some pucks.
All right, we'll let you go get ready. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
Quinton Howden joining us here. And, Paul, yes, the players will make their way onto the ice coming up at 11 o'clock. And we'll talk to everybody here as FanFest continues throughout the day.
Lots of things going on. Don't forget ball hockey with Mickey today. So come on down. You can play Xbox or ball hockey with Mickey. Lots going on at FanFest here in West Winnipeg.
For Quinton Howden, Paul Edmonds, I'm Brian Munns. FanFest continues here at the Iceplex on TSN 1290.
Drew, I know you want to get into the Montreal Canadiens here, but just as an aside, I really hope Quinton Howden spends some time, some significant time with the Winnipeg Jets this year. You know, hometown boy from Oak Bank, Manitoba, played with the Florida Panthers last year. You know, there's only been a few guys that have played significant time with the Jets who are from Winnipeg. Derek Meach, Eric Fair from Winkler, I consider kind of like a Winnipeg or so. You know,
a Manitoban at the least.
Yeah, very well-spoken guy, and, you know, really nice to see him sign with the Jets.
Yeah, he's in tight as one of those guys battling for a final spot here in the Winnipeg Jets training camp. As I mentioned, the Montreal Canadiens opened training camp a couple days ago as well, like every other NHL team, and they already got some controversy. Here's Montreal Canadiens head coach Michel Therrien.
Yeah, first of all, I never said those things, okay? And I don't pay attention, quite honest, to hearsay. And if I start to pay attention to everything that they say, and I'm gonna lose my as a coach, I'm gonna lose my focus, and I don't really pay attention to those things.
So you're asking, what did they say that Michel Therrien said? The reports are that Michel Therrien referred to Max Pacioretty, only the Montreal Canadiens captain, as, quote, the worst captain in Canadiens history. So things are going well in Montreal to start the season.
Well, I mean, but of course, let's qualify that, quote, report was something supposedly overheard at a golf course.
Yes. You know, a radio host in Montreal, Michel Villeneuve, said that he overheard.
Is he related to Jacques?
I don't know. But he overheard Michel Therrien saying that Max Pacioretty was the worst captain in Montreal Canadiens history.
I find it very hard to believe that Michel Therrien is going to say Max Pacioretty is the worst captain in Montreal Canadiens history at a golf tournament. Just doesn't seem like something he would say.
Why would he say that? It doesn't seem like something any respecting head coach would say about their player.
Hold on. I disagree. I think a coach would feel fine saying that in the confines of his office, talking to his other coaches. If he's, you know, if he feels that way, then that's fine. Like two, you know, Maurice and you know, Pascal Vincent would talk about that sort of thing. I'm not saying that they felt that sentiment, but I'm saying like they would have open,
candid,
honest discussions,
conversations,
right? In that setting, when you're in a golf tournament and the media is there. I'm not calling this guy a liar. I don't know. I mean, if he says he heard it, then maybe he heard it. Who knows? Maybe there's something got lost in translation. But all I'm saying is that,
like Bill Murray.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is I find it very, like, I'm with Ez. I'm a little skeptical that a coach would make that sort of gaffe with the media around. It seems very difficult to buy that he would be that free and be like, think about it like this from a perspective of, what is the benefit of saying that?
There is no benefit.
You're not trying to promote yourself as a big man. Like, I'm the coach, and this guy's the worst captain ever. I mean, like,
He's a new captain. He hasn't been a captain for very long. So it strikes me as very odd and not believable that Michel Therrien, in fact, said this.
It doesn't logically make any sense.
And he said that he didn't say it. But, of course, at this point,
for sure, he's going to say that, obviously.
Even if it's on tape, he's going to deny it's him saying it, for God's sake, at this point.
Oh, that wasn't my voice. Yeah, you have to bring in a voice structure expert. It'd be a whole thing.
There's no way he would ever admit to it. But
although in Montreal, for the record, I suspect that they would do that.
In Montreal, this is just it's a bad start to, I would describe, a very important training camp for the Montreal Canadiens because of the move they made with PK Subban in the offseason.
Yep.
Both Michel Therrien and their general manager,
Marc Bergevin,
thank you, name escaped me there for a second, put a lot of the spotlight and a lot of pressure right on both of their shoulders.
I think their jobs are both on
the
line.
Ask you,
absolutely.
Is there a coach under more pressure to start the season and start the season well with a healthy Carey Price than Michel Therrien in the entire NHL?
No, I don't think there is. Montreal started off last season winning, 9 or 10 games in a row. Yeah. It looked like they were going to cruise into the Eastern Conference playoffs, and they were just awful, especially after Carey Price went down with his injury the second time in late November. And, you know, they made some moves. You mentioned, Drew, trading PK Subban for Shea Weber was arguably the biggest trade we've seen in, 10 years, 15 years? You don't see all-star defensemen traded like that for each other. And when you look at Carey Price and how he's played in the World Cup, he's ready. He's good to go. They made some off-season moves.
Yeah. They're certainly grittier, Andrew Shaw.
Some of which, you know, you mentioned Andrew Shaw, Drew. You know, they traded Lars Eller to Washington. Andrew Shaw is a guy that obviously has the Stanley Cup pedigree with Chicago. He's going to slot in on the third or fourth line. He definitely gives them some more grit, and Montreal definitely needs that. Alexander Radulov was good in Russia since he left the Nashville Predators, so they bring him back. I was a little bit surprised that they threw that much money at him. I think they gave him $4 or $5 million a year. So certainly Alexander Radulov is going to give them more primary offense. He'll probably slot in on that second line. But to me, at the end of
$5.75 million for the 1 year.
To me, at the end of the day, Drew, the defense has got to be better, and up the middle, they've got to decide who's our number one center. Is it Alex Galchenyuk, or is it still Thomas Plekanec? Because Alex Galchenyuk certainly didn't take the step forward that they were expecting, and they didn't get the secondary offense. After Max Pacioretty and after Brendan Gallagher and Alex Galchenyuk, they just weren't getting enough offense from the third and fourth lines, and that's where they really struggled. Mm-hmm. If one of those four players wasn't producing, they just weren't going to score enough goals. And the defense, I didn't think, was good enough. And, you know, I know you want to talk about Nathan Beaulieu and the trade rumors surrounding him. I actually thought he was one of their best defensemen after PK Subban and after Andre Markov.
Well, I think they're thinking that Mikhail Sergachev, their first-round pick this past season, is ready at 18. Hard to believe that, you know, he's ready at 18 to step in and maybe would play the role that Beaulieu is playing. And as a result, it seems like
a lot of pressure, though, Drew. Yeah. Like, you're putting a lot – like, Mikhail Sergachev, from everything that I've read and heard from scouts, is that he was arguably the best defenseman in the 2016 NHL draft, mm-hmm. with maybe the exception of Olli Juolevi.
Yeah.
But to put a guy in a situation where you're expecting him to play top 4 minutes, because Nathan Beaulieu at times was playing in the top four along with Jeff Petrie – And certainly the Montreal Canadiens don't have the best group of defensemen. I still think they could use a more veteran stay-at-home defenseman because Andre Markov has got, what, 1 or 2 years left in the NHL?
He's 39 years old already. I mean, you're asking a lot. You're asking, he's a UFA after the season. But you're asking a lot out of a 37-year-old defenseman to play at a very high level. It's not like, you know, Shea Weber's got a lot of miles on his body as well. Whatever you think of his performance, whether it's slipping or whether he's been consistent, he's 31 years old and he's got a lot of miles on his body. So the Montreal Canadiens are still, I would describe, as a team very much in flux. I don't know that they've done it's Carey Price or bust. I mean, he's their best player and he needs to be otherworldly, I think, for this Montreal Canadiens team to, you know, replicate the start they had at last season when they were undefeated in their first 11 or 13 games or whatever the number was to start the year last year.
Right, Drew, and that's still a problem. Sure. If you're still depending on Carey Price to get a shutout or only let in 1 or 2 goals a game, that's a problem, and that is what is flawed with this team. It still is just not a deep enough team to not have to always depend on Carey Price. For me, Drew, the Montreal Canadiens are a bubble playoff team. I don't know if I think they're going to make the playoffs or not. I just there are so many what ifs. I mean, you have the best goaltender in the world in Carey Price, but you're depending a lot on Alexander Radulov to come back from the KHL and give you 25, 30 goals. You're expecting a lot out of a guy like Andrew Shaw to play now on the third line and score for you. You're expecting a lot out of a guy like Daniel Carr, who has limited NHL experience. So I look at this Canadiens team and the offseason moves they made. I like Shea Weber. I have no problem with trading PK Subban for Shea Weber. I think in the short term, that's a pretty even trade. But I don't know how much better they've got since last season.
When we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we'll look around the NHL, talk about some news and notes from a number of different franchises. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday here on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Still to come on the program, at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald joins us to talk about the Flames. And then John Rosen, LA Kings insider, joins us to talk about the team from La La Land. That's coming up at 11:30 this morning. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Still time, boys. It's supposed to be nice today. Warm, at least. A little cloudy, but warm. To swing the sticks. Not yet time to put them away. Still time to swing them. Head out to Bell Acres. Head out to Clear Lake Golf Course if you're up in the Riding Mountain area. Get some more golf in before the unfortunate white flurries begin to fall from the sky. But while you got it, swing some sticks. Play some golf.
And if you're thinking of playing Bell Acres this weekend, I've been reliably informed that this weekend they have a special rate.
Do tell.
Today and tomorrow, $49. With a golf cart, which is an excellent rate. So hopefully it doesn't rain and you get out to the golf course and head out to Bell Acres.
There you go.
Very easily. I got to tell you, Riding Mountain National Park, spectacular golf course.
Yes, Clear Lake Golf Course, beautiful. You can watch the foliage. You can watch the leaves changing color.
I don't know that you actually can literally watch it, but it's beautiful while you're walking.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I don't know that you can actually pinpoint, wow, that leaf just changed from green to burgundy or something.
The chlorophyll in the belief is
chlorophyll, more like borophyll.
Dave, have you ever seen the Northern Lights?
I have.
What did you think? Apparently they're spectacular.
I'm thinking you're referencing some sort of tweet I've sent in the past. I don't know.
I've never seen the Northern Lights. I've seen pictures.
It's interesting, actually, because you can actually see them very easily from the city, but it's usually muted because there's so many lights and stuff. But it oftentimes, actually, shout out to Okamak Marsh. If you just drive 15 minutes north, it's off Highway 67, and you can actually get a really unobscured, no visual pollution view of the Northern Lights. Fairly close to the city, about 15 minutes north. So
no visual pollution, eh?
That's right.
Never heard that turn of phrase before. I'll tell you what, I know what audio pollution is, and that's this show in a nutshell.
Do you think former NHLer Brad Marsh has ever been to Okamak Marsh?
NHL news and notes.
Let's look around the league for some news and notes from around. Let's start with the Winnipeg Jets Central Division rival. Valerie Nichushkin, a former first-round pick of the Stars, has left the team. He's a restricted free agent. He signs a two-year contract with CSKA Moscow of the KHL, similar to what a former Winnipeg Jets player, a current Winnipeg Jets player, did a number of years ago with Alex Burmistrov, leaving the team for more money in the KHL. Is this a big loss to the Stars, Ezzy? Or is this a case of, as Jim Neal said when he was asked about it, Stars GM Jim Neal, you know, Nichushkin can go to Russia, get a little more comfortable with his game, spend a couple seasons there, and then have an opportunity to come back as a more mature player to Dallas?
Drew, I think you nailed it. It is very similar to what happened with Alexander Burmistrov after the second Jets 2.0 season, because Alexander Burmistrov wasn't playing in the top six. I think that's what's happening here with Valerie Nichushkin. And Nichushkin's a guy that a couple years ago missed most of the season due to injury, but certainly when Nichushkin...
Hip surgery.
It was hip surgery. And when Nichushkin came into the NHL as an 18-year-old and, you know, he put up 14 goals and 34 points, the expectations were sky high, and then he unfortunately had the injury. And then last year, had a decent season, but I don't think he had the season that the Dallas Stars were expecting for a guy that probably you would say has 30-goal, 60, 70-point potential. But it's a situation in Dallas, Drew, where there's just so many forwards ahead of him on the depth chart, and the Dallas Stars went out and they signed a guy like Yuri Hudler, who's going to play on that second line with Jason Spezza and probably Alex Hemsky. But certainly that top line of Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and whoever it is, whether that's Patrick Sharp or whoever, there's certainly other players ahead of him on the depth chart. So I don't think that the Dallas Stars are going to struggle that much. I still think the Dallas Stars are either the best or the second best team in the entire Western Conference. They're certainly going to compete with the likes of St. Louis and Chicago for the Central Division title this year, Drew. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, you look at other guys on the Dallas Stars roster, guys like Matthias Janmark or Radek Faksa, who I thought had a really good playoffs for Dallas. Cody Eakin is a staple of that third line at center. So I don't think the Dallas Stars are going to be hurting that much without Valerie Nichushkin. And to answer your question, yeah, I think, you know, he might be better suited to play more in the KHL, gain some more confidence, and then come back a couple years later like Alexander Burmistrov did with Winnipeg.
If I recall correctly, when Nichushkin was drafted, he was drafted with the caveat sort of attached to him that he was expecting to play immediately in the NHL. He wasn't interested in going to play in the AHL because that's where his eligibility was, given that he played pro in Russia. That if he didn't make the Stars immediately, it was sort of assumed he was going to go back to the KHL. He wasn't interested in playing in the AHL. So you sort of always knew that in the background this was a possibility, that Nichushkin wouldn't be interested in playing a lesser role, isn't interested in sort of putting in his AHL dues. He was interested in NHL or bust.
Right, and that could very well be the case, Drew. But at the end of the day, not many players can demand that. Mm-hmm. And especially, as we talked about, with the Sagans and the Bens and the Sharps and the Hoodlers and all these guys ahead of him,
sure,
he's just not going to get maybe the playing time that he wants. So he's decided to go to Russia.
Yeah.
Maybe he stays there. Maybe he comes back in a couple years and returns to Dallas. Maybe, you know, it's with another team. Who knows? But certainly, you know, he's young enough that he can do that at this point in his career.
The Dallas Stars, of course, maintain his RFA rights as long as they continue to make him a qualifying offer, which they will undoubtedly do. In Washington, another RFA, this is Dmitry Orlov. He signs a one-year, $2.57 million contract with the Capitals. Orlov quietly had a very impressive year for the Capitals last season.
Well, Dmitry Orlov is actually playing on the top pair for Team Russia at the World Cup of Hockey with Nikita Zaitsev, who is an unsigned free agent who signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Dmitry Orlov is a guy who played at the beginning of the season on the third pair, and he's emerged, as you mentioned, Drew, into a top four defenseman. I thought he was really good in the playoffs, and whether he ends up being paired up with Carl Alsner or John Carlson, certainly John Carlson is a guy who spent a significant amount of time on the top pair of Washington with Matt Niskanen. Dmitry Orlov is a guy who can move the puck. He's got a physical element to his game. So, you know, that was a nice signing. A guy that you might see signing for longer than that, quite honestly. He's 25 years old. I thought he might sign a 3 or 4 year deal, maybe even a 5 year deal. But then again, you know, this gives him the ability to become a UFA.
Well, and if he's a, I believe he's still an RFA next year, if I'm not mistaken. So this is just a 1 year bridge contract. So
very underrated defenseman.
If he performs, you know, with added minutes, if he continues to perform like he did last season, he could be in for a larger contract next season. That's why I think the Capitals were okay giving him that 1 year deal, is because they still maintain his RFA rights. He'd be arbitration eligible next season, but still a big deal for Washington to maintain his rights. You know, Orlov 16:01 per game. That's what he played last season on average. That was lowest ice time of any defenseman to play the entire season, but his 8-goal, 29-point campaign was the best offensive performance of any blue liner to skate primarily bottom pairing minutes. Shout out to the Hockey News for that stat.
Yeah, and the thing is, Drew, I think that those minutes will go up simply because I don't know if Brooks Orpik, with all of his injury problems mm-hmm. and his age, is a top four defenseman anymore.
Sure.
And at the beginning of the season, Washington had him penciled in, so now a guy like Orlov can play on that second pair with a more offensive-minded defenseman like John Carlson. So, yeah, I like that signing by Washington.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. Let's leave it there. We may circle back to some more news and notes from around the NHL, but we come back with Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three coming up here on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Calgary Herald. She covers the Calgary Flames, Kristen Odland. Kristen, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just at the Saddle Dome for another ice time in the long process that is the training camp, the Flames' main training camp. So it's been an exciting couple of days, that's for sure. Lots of excitement here in Calgary over the new look, if you will, Calgary Flames.
Well, the new look Calgary Flames are missing one player on the ice, so we might as well start with that. And
who's
of course,
that?
Who's that? He wouldn't be expected to be on the ice just yet, having just finished his performance with Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey. An electric performance at that. Johnny Gaudreau, of course, is who I'm talking about. The status of contract negotiations, obviously they put a sort of a pause on it as the tournament was underway. Are they now hitting the ground running, Brad Tree Living and Goudreau's representation, trying to hammer out a deal so that he can join his teammates on the ice at the Saddle Dome?
Sadly, there's no new news on that. I know it's been a long, arduous process for the Calgary Flames trying to negotiate with his agent, Louis Gross. It's, you know, one of those things that's just going to take time. They want to get paid. Their camp wants to get paid, and the Flames have a number in mind, and they don't necessarily want to budge. We've heard different numbers that Johnny's camp is asking for around $8 million, and simply they just, you know, I don't know if they're prepared to pay him more than their captain, Mark Giordano. He currently has, when his contract kicks in this year, his six-year deal, he's going to be the top player, paid player on the Flames, and then Sean Monahan. So it's kind of a game of chicken. It's kind of a game of a waiting game. So Brad Tree Living, unfortunately, you know, we talked to him on Thursday when the Flames physicals and medicals and fitness testing went underway. We talked to him about that, and he didn't have any news for us, but he did say that Johnny Gaudreau cannot participate in Flames camp without a contract. So that's just the breaks. You know, he's going to have to. And knowing Johnny Gaudreau, he wants to be here. I mean, he's a player. Like, he wants to compete. He wants to be here. And since the Team North America, you know, kind of got knocked out of the tournament, it's just a waiting game now to see if they can come to an agreement in the next couple of days or weeks, hopefully before the start of the season, that's for sure.
Kristen, I think you would agree that Johnny Gaudreau was one of the most exciting players to watch for Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey, along with the likes of Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews. His performance at the World Cup of Hockey, what kind of impact would that possibly have on contract demands?
Well, it puts the pressure on the Flames, that's for sure. I mean, they know what they have in Johnny Gaudreau. They've known it since they drafted him. He's a special player. It's funny because everybody is oohing and aahing over the things that Johnny Gaudreau can do, and we see that every day in practice. Like, he's just that dynamic of a player and competes on every shift and does amazing things with the puck and, you know, at practice or during the playoffs. Like, we've seen it all. So they know what they have in him, and it's no surprise that he was dominating and on a World Cup stage. He obviously stood out, but the Flames knew what they had in him. And, you know, we were joking, and I've seen on Twitter every time Johnny would score or do something, people would say, cha-ching, 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 and, like, you know, insinuating that he deserved a little bit more money or a bit of a raise, or all of a sudden his stock is rising. But, you know, I think his performance just solidifies the type of player they have, and he's going to get paid. And, you know, whether they budge, whether that performance kind of made them budge on that number, it'll remain to be seen. But it's definitely put the pressure on the Flames staff, Bradford Living, and his management staff.
Kristen, what are the expectations of Flames fans? You know, this is a team that has only made the playoffs once, I think, in the last 7 years. And you know, every team kind of goes through a rebuild, whether they want to call it that or not. But are expectations in Calgary picking up, and are fans expecting this team to do something in the immediate future?
Sure. I mean, they've been patient. It's not the rebuild process. I mean, you look north of Calgary just about 3 hours, and you see what's going on up there, and they've been – their fan base, you know, Calgary's fan base almost is at the point where they feel sorry for the Edmonton fan base, what they've gone through over the past 10 years. But rebuilding process, the Flames are still, you know, you could say they're still in a rebuild, but I honestly do think that the fans here in Calgary are, you know, their patience is wearing thin. At some point, you have to put what you do in the off season on paper. You have to put that into action. And this year, you know, I said this last year, and I said this the year before that, but this year, I really do think that they've got some nice pieces in place. And we thought that heading into last season, just because they'd added Dougie Hamilton. You know, Johnny Gaudreau was another year older. Sean Monahan was another year older. They were going to see what they had in Sam Bennett for a healthy Sam Bennett for an entire season. But this year, you know, adding a guy like Troy Brouwer, who's won before, he's a veteran. He's already impacted the dressing room and the feel around the players. And then you add a solidified goaltending in Brian Elliott and Chad Johnson. That's a position where the fans definitely won't have a lot of patience in. You know, given what they've gone through last year with Jonas Hiller and Kari Ramo and Yoni Orchio and then Nicholas Backstrom, it was like this carousel of goaltenders that couldn't really, you know, the players just didn't have a lot of trust in. So, you know, there's a time limit to it. You know, you'd like to think that the fans are patient and they know what the management is trying to do, but there comes a point where you have to kind of put what happens in the off season on ice.
Kristen Odland, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Calgary Flames. And you mentioned Brian Elliott, and that's where I wanted to go with your next question. And, you know, last year there was a carousel of bad goaltending in Calgary. How reassuring is it to the organization and to the defensemen playing in front of Brian Elliott that they know they have a professional goaltender who's put up very impressive regular season numbers, finally broke through and had his first sort of success in the playoffs this past season? How reassuring is it to them to know that this is a guy who's going to, for the most part, make the saves he's supposed to make, whereas they didn't have that luxury last season?
Hey, that's like 85% of the battle, is gaining trust from the defense in front of you, and then that just ripples out. Ripple effects. Like, I think you said it the best. You're totally right. It's huge for the Flames to have a goaltender that they can trust in and they know is going to stop the puck. And You know, it's going to take a couple of games just to kind of get used to the way, you know, he plays and the way, you know, he plays the puck. And that's it. Like, it's going to be interesting definitely during the preseason to see how that materializes. But, you know, Brian Elliott is happy he's in Calgary as well, too. He's got a huge opportunity to be a number one starting goaltender, which he, you know, deep down he believes he still is. And he, you know, you look in St. Louis, and he was excellent down the playoffs stretch, and for the Blues, and they just have had an embarrassment of riches in net with Jake Allen. So those two are 1A, 1B, and it was, you know, in some ways it surprised the trade, surprised St. Louis media. They didn't kind of see that coming because they felt like St. Louis was pretty happy with what they had in those two goalies. So, you know, to kind of get a guy like that and then to have a suitable NHL backup in Chad Johnson, who just has a good demeanor, but, you know, is still competing to be the number one goalie as well, but, you know, knows his place. And you know, you really, that's kind of where it all starts. If you have that, and then it kind of flows out from there. And obviously with new systems, Glenn Gullitson is putting in the new head coach, a Manitoba native. There's a lot of optimism, that's for sure, in terms of you know, having a solidified goaltender in net.
Kristen, we wanted to ask you about Michael Backlund, who was an injury replacement for Team Sweden. Unfortunately, he was knocked out of the tournament on a Sami Lepisto hit, of course, Finland against Sweden. And Michael Backlund, unfortunately, is not going to be able to play for Team Europe tomorrow. Is there any worry that Michael Backlund isn't going to be able to start the regular season? And also, could you provide us with an injury update on Sean Monahan?
Yes, sure. So with Michael Backlund, he's playing for Team Sweden. They didn't rule him out of the tournament. I haven't seen yet today what the or talked to Brad Treliving yet today about where it's at. But the last update that we got on Michael Backlund, who had suffered a concussion, was they're obviously they're optimistic about it, but they say. Brad Treliving was saying that the symptoms aren't as bad. Now, you never know with a concussion, things can, you know, flare up within a couple of days. Michael Backlund doesn't have a recent history with concussions. It's not great for the Flames to have that. I did ask Brad about, you know, does this change your opinion of this type of tournament? Everybody knew that going in, injury was going to be a risk, a huge risk. Potential injury was going to be a risk with this tournament and injuring guys before the start of the season. But Brad kind of said it's a privilege to play in this tournament and to be recognized on a world stage. And for Michael Backlund to, you know, it's unfortunate what happened, but he's in good hands. The Flames doctors are actually in Toronto monitoring his situation. So they do hope that it's not as serious, you know, that his concussion symptoms aren't serious and he can, you know, rest in a couple of weeks and then hopefully be back to start the season. But haven't heard a recent update as of yet. In terms of Sean Monahan, he'd injured his back right before the World Cup, the Team North America World Cup training camp. Now, and then pulled out of it just because he wanted to rest. He signed a huge contract at the start or in the summertime. So his loyalties are to the Calgary Flames, and he wanted to be 100%. They're being cautious with him. I've seen him skate. He's been doing drills kind of by himself. So it's on one hand, it's kind of alarming. You see, one of your best players is, you know, out for training camp. But I don't think they're overly worried about it. They're just being overly cautious and want to make sure he's 100% for the start of the season. He'll play about three games towards the end of the preseason schedule. So probably won't see him in Winnipeg on, I think it's next Tuesday. So,
Kristen, speaking of a name Winnipeggers are very familiar with, Matthew Tkachuk, his father, obviously. But what are the expectations for him? Are there, you know, obviously you wrote about it yesterday in the Calgary Herald, but is there any chance that you see him playing on this team this season?
You know, it's funny. They draft a guy so high, and this is, I know this kind of goes through the minds of every writer that covers or every media member of the media that covers a team. And, you know, they draft a guy and you kind of don't know what to think. Like, you don't know if he's going to for sure make the team. There's a few situations where it's for sure 100% he's going to make the team. And sometimes the teams come out and say it. With Matthew Tkachuk, it's kind of different. When the Flames drafted Sean Monahan sixth overall in 2013, you didn't really think he was going to make the team. But all of a sudden, he comes into camp. He looks like he's, you know, 25 years old. He's put on muscle over the summer, and he just plays himself onto the roster. Like, the Flames just couldn't say no. They had no expectation, or no expectations, because he did draft him sixth overall, but they kind of had measured expectations of Sean Monahan. If he goes back to junior, that's great. He can, you know, get stronger, have another year of an experience. But with Matthew Tkachuk, it's kind of the same scenario. Is he going to play himself on the team? We don't know yet. He's confident right now. We talked to him yesterday, and he's already, like, feels like he's an NHLer, I think, in his head. But on the ice, I mean, it's one thing to play that style. I mean, he really impressed in Penticton. He's kind of got an edge, like his dad. and he's comfortable. He's got that NHL pedigree. He's been around dressing rooms his entire life. Like, he knows the culture. He knows what it takes to be a good teammate. He acclimatized himself earlier this month. He wanted to come a little bit early to meet the guys and start informally skating with some of them. So he's putting himself in on the best track to make this team. Now, whether he's got what it takes or the Flames think that he is going to benefit from another year in junior, that's kind of remains to be seen. But, you know, from what we've heard from the Flames management, they're not putting a lot of pressure on him right now. At least, you know, in the media's perspective, like into the media, you know, they're not saying, oh, well, this guy's got to make our team. We picked him sixth overall. They're not saying that. But, you know, if he makes a team, great. And if he can contribute, great. But it's contributing every day. It's being an everyday NHLer that's really going to be the biggest hurdle for Matthew Tkachuk.
Kristen Odland covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, really appreciate your time this morning. Stampeders or Bombers this afternoon?
Oh, you know, they're both rolling. I was talking to John Huffnagel. I saw him at the Flames golf tournament. And he's like, I said, your team is rolling. And he said, well, the other guys are rolling too. So I don't know. I hope it's a good game. You always hope that. But I'm interested to see how the Bombers do. Calgary's been amazing at home. I think they're 34-4 at home in their last, like, 38 games. So,
we'll know by 6 o'clock tonight, right?
Yeah.
All righty, Kristen.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for joining us. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Los Angeles Kings and check in with the guys at the Iceplex. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
We'll talk about the Los Angeles Kings coming up this segment. That, of course, was Joe Pavelski scoring on the Kings in last year's Stanley Cup playoffs, where the Kings were eliminated by the Sharks in 5 games. John Rosen, LA Kings insider, is going to join us in about 10 minutes' time as well. Should mention that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Tom Green. You know him. You know the name. He's been in town since Thursday. Tickets all sold out for Tom Green, so you missed your opportunity to get him. But there's some other fabulous comedians coming up in October at Rumors, so be sure to get your tickets. Deborah DiGiovanni's coming. Glenn Foster, that Canadian guy, is coming. And, of course, John Doerr, all coming in October. Tickets going quickly. Get them right now at RumorsComedyClub.com.
I've met Deborah before.
Yeah?
I met her at the Met.
Oh.
During the Winnipeg Comedy Festival.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, very nice.
I assume she's somewhere right now talking about how she once met Ezzy.
Yeah, I don't think so, but she is hilarious.
She is quite funny.
She's been in the comedy game for a long time.
She's quite funny. If you, she'll be at Rumors coming up in October, October 13th to 15th. Get your tickets now, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Maybe me and you have a little bro date?
How about not? Let's head back to the Iceplex where Brian Munns and Paul Edmonds are standing by.
Thanks, guys, and good morning, everybody, once again, actually, for the final time. Paulie, we've made our way inside the Iceplex. We've had a chance to go through all the different things that are going on outside, and that will continue until 3 o'clock here today. But this is now something fans have been waiting for. They came onto the ice here at 11 o'clock this morning, and we're getting to see the Winnipeg Jets now on the ice.
Well, they're going to shorten down the sessions a little bit, but there is going to be three on-ice sessions, as you mentioned, the 11 o'clock session underway. They'll also go at 12:20 and then at 1:40. So if you're hesitating about coming down or have been thinking about it, come on down. You'll still see lots of hockey, lots of workouts here today, lots of things going on outside. The Xbox, Jets versus Moose, you can play. Ball hockey with, of course, Mickey, arts and crafts. There's inflatables. You can sign up for Jets Rewards. There's shooting accuracy and alumni autograph session. Alex Steen was here. Or no, actually, Thomas Steen was here. Alex Steen just signed a new four-year contract with St. Louis. But you can see his dad here at FanFest for the Winnipeg Jets.
Looking forward to seeing, actually, what the Winnipeg Jets look like on the ice. A quick update for the hockey fan. The only player right now that looks to be not taking part in the regular sessions is Brendan Lemieux. He was on the other ice earlier on today with their director of fitness, Craig Slonwhite, and we'll hopefully get an update from assistant coach Jamie Compon as the day continues. We're here until 3 o'clock. FanFest continues. Winnipeg Jets are on the ice getting ready for the upcoming season. For Paul Edmonds, I'm Brian Munns inside the Iceplex on TSN 1290.
Always a pleasure to have Munsey and Edmonds on the program with us on a Saturday morning, so thanks to those guys. Like you said, they're out at the Iceplex on ice action now taking place after having been delayed by the power outage, so you can head down to the Iceplex if you're looking for something to do on this Saturday morning. You know where you can also head? Should plug this one. Keener Jerseys, their grand opening is today at 982 Portage Avenue, which is the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Our good friends Keener Jerseys is going to have a brand new jersey giveaways. Come check out the store. Put in an order to get your jersey personalized. Maybe you got a Heritage Classic jersey. You want to get a name on that. They'll take care of that for you at Keener Jerseys. Ezzy, you and Dave are going to head down there after the program. So I think you guys are signing autographs. Is that my understanding?
Nobody wants our autograph, Drew, but we will be down there. And we should mention Keener Jerseys grand opening goes till 3 p.m.
That's right.
So get down there. We're going to be there, and it's going to be good times.
It is going to be good times. John Rosen of the Los Angeles Kings insider, Fox Sports West, is going to join us in about 5 minutes' time. The Kings are an interesting team to me, guys, as we head into this 2016-17 NHL season.
Very interesting.
A team that disappointed and underperformed last year in the playoffs. Granted, they lost to the Western Conference champions, but most people thought that the manner in which they lost, losing in five games, not looking especially competitive in a lot of those games, was a bad sign for the future of the Los Angeles Kings. I look at this Kings team, and the top-end talent they have might be second to none in the NHL. Anze Kopitar, fantastic player.
Who's been great in the World Cup.
Been great for Team Europe, probably leading them, I would suggest, through. He's now the new captain of the LA Kings. Pardon me. You have Drew Doughty.
Drew, did you get a hairball there?
I got a little bit. I got a sore throat I've been fighting through.
What's
the entire...
What's going on here?
You have Drew Doughty. You have Jake Muzzin, both playing for Team Canada. Jonathan Quick played for Team USA. But the guys that are a step below them, it's their depth guys that I think are going to be the big issue for the Los Angeles Kings this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. And, you know, you mentioned that the playoffs were very disappointing, losing to the San Jose Sharks in the first round, of course. But this team is still one of the best defensive teams in the entire league. I think they were second to the Anaheim Ducks in goals allowed last year. And as you mentioned, they're very top-heavy. I mean, Anze Kopitar, one of the best centers in the world. And, you know, you mentioned the supporting cast. Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin, of course, anchoring that back end. But if anything, I was a little bit surprised that they weren't more aggressive in getting a defenseman. And I understand it. I get it. The LA Kings just don't have the cap room.
No.
They're paying guys like Dustin Brown and Marian Gaborik a lot of money. And those are guys that at this point in their careers are secondary scorers. Dustin Brown certainly is not a guy that you can expect more than 35, 40 points out of at this point in his career.
That's one of the worst contracts in the NHL.
Well, but let's be honest here. After the Kings won their first cup in 2012,
yeah,
Dustin Brown had a Conn Smythe-worthy playoffs. So he was coming off. I don't know if he signed the contract after they won that first cup or before, but certainly I agree with you, Drew. Dustin Brown has taken a step back.
Brown signed that contract after the 2014-15 season. That's when he signed right. It was a big eight-year, $47 million
right.
contract.
It looks like a bad contract.
And he hasn't cracked 30 points right. in the last four seasons.
He hasn't been good, and that's probably one of the reasons why they gave the C to Anze Kopitar. Let's be honest. Anze Kopitar is the leader both on and off of this, on and off the ice for the Kings anyways. But, you know, you look at this team, and I still think they're going to be a tough team to play against, Dave. Like, I still think the Kings are a playoff team, and I still think that they've got a good supporting cast around Anze Kopitar and Jeff Carter. Like, Tyler Toffoli is still one of my favorite players, a good young player for this team, Tanner Pearson. The big acquisitions that the Kings made were acquiring Teddy Purcell, who's probably going to slot in either on the second or third line on the wing. They went out and they got Michael Latta, who's a fourth-line guy, played for the Capitals last year. Aside from that, you basically went out and acquired Tom Gilbert, who's a third-pairing defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens last year. And I just don't know if they've made enough moves to, once the playoffs come around, to beat teams like the Anaheim Ducks or the San Jose Sharks. So I agree with you. They're an interesting team. It's a veteran team now. It's a team that's still really good in goal and still really strong on defense. But it's an aging team. And I look at the Kings and I wonder if they do make a move, especially if they struggle in the early part of the season, because, as Drew mentioned, the depth at forward certainly is not there, and the depth at defense is certainly not there, especially when you consider, guys, this is a team that was a Stanley Cup champion, and they've really fallen far, you know, especially missing the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah, they missed it 2 years ago. They got into the playoffs last year, yeah. but went out very meekly in the five games.
And with teams like Calgary and Edmonton, guys, you know, coming up in that division, mm-hmm. it's not going to be as easy for the Kings just to pencil themselves into the playoffs.
And the Kings have a grand total of $29,000 in projected salary cap space entering the start of the 2016-17 NHL season. So things are tough in Los Angeles.
Well, I mean, I think as he speaks to it, it's a shallowness, and, you know, you don't have any cap room.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if you have any significant injuries to your veteran players? So, I mean, it really is a big problem for the team. And then, like, Lombardi was quoted in, you know, a write-up on NHL.com. He said, I also think, talking about their playoffs, I think we had some mental issues in terms of the team having dealt with success. And a good punch in the nose like we got in the playoffs hopefully woke us all up.
Well, if it doesn't wake them all up, they might not be a playoff team this coming season. Let's go to break. John Rosen, the LA Kings insider, the ringside reporter on Fox Sports West, joins us next to talk about the Kings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk as we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, John Rosen. John is the LA Kings insider. He's also the ringside reporter on Fox Sports West. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning. Always my pleasure to join Illegal Curve. Thanks so much.
Our pleasure to have you, John. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Los Angeles Kings as we get started with the 2016-2017 season, training camp underway for the NHL teams. Of course, the Kings without Anze Kopitar as he's still competing in the World Cup of Hockey. So I want to start with him as it was sort of an off season of a little bit of turmoil for the Los Angeles Kings as they made the decision to remove the captaincy from Dustin Brown and hand it over to Anze Kopitar. Why did they make this decision? Was it a decision based a combination on ice performance, or was there and sort of a wanting a new voice in the locker room, or was there something else going on there?
I think there are a lot of different factors. I think first and foremost, the status quo just wasn't quite right for this Kings team. And you look at the last 2 years coming off of two Stanley Cups in three seasons, which were abruptly followed by just one playoff win in 2 years. They're looking, I think, to just transfer the captaincy into the hands of right now their best player, the reigning Selke and Lady Bing trophy winner. So I think this was something that had been considered for several years. I had heard murmurings of that, but given that the Kings, again, were coming off of a Stanley Cup back in 2014, perhaps it was put off by a year. In any event, you kind of have to feel for Dustin Brown. The production has been down for him. You know, he's been in the high 20s, points-wise for the last several seasons, but has done everything that has been asked of him. The Kings back in 2011-12, I mean, they're not. You can make a case that they're not Stanley Cup champions without the type of postseason that Dustin Brown had that year. And this is not a reflection of anything about Dustin Brown's leadership. I think if you ask him, and I did speak with him about this yesterday, and Daryl Sutter has often said, you look around the dressing room, there's very good leadership everywhere. Obviously, just like many teams, it's not just the players who wear those letters. So it's just a little bit of a shakeup. We'll see if it has any real tangible effect in production or in the standings. But part of it is also because the team sees it as perhaps this gives Brown an opportunity not to have to focus on what's going on in the room and being that type of captain figure where you have to give yourself to other aspects of leadership, not just going out and focusing on production. At least that's the way the team has put forward that type of decision. But we'll see. We haven't seen Kopitar back in L.A. He's been on a very extensive road trip, having qualified for the Olympics in Minsk, Belarus, with Slovenia. He's then traveled out to Quebec and Montreal and then back to Toronto with the World Cup of Hockey. So it'll be interesting to get him back, and hopefully he has a good frequent flyer account because he just padded his miles quite a bit.
John, sticking with the World Cup of Hockey and Kings goaltender Jonathan Quick, it was obviously disappointing for the Los Angeles Kings to finish second in the division and then get knocked out by the San Jose Sharks in the first round. But Jonathan Quick, I thought, kind of quietly had one of his best regular seasons, winning 40 games for the LA Kings. I guess it's safe to say that the performance of the U.S. was disappointing for Jonathan Quick and the rest of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't been around, the World Cup team, so I can't get a sense of what the feel was, before or after the tournament. But Jonathan Quick is one of those guys that is one of the leaders, is one of those types of captains on this Kings team. And kind of the emotional pulse races through him as it does through many players on this Kings team. Quick had a very good season. Now leads the all U.S.-born goaltenders in shutouts all time, set a record for most wins all time by a Kings goaltender last year. One of the more impressive things about that, because there, I think, is a fairly healthy debate on Quick and overall and what he provides to this Kings team. But he is somebody that, if you look at the last several seasons, the Kings defense has not been as deep as it has been in previous years. And he's been seeing slightly more scoring chances against per game. And still the Kings finished, I believe, third in the league in goals against per game. It's partly because of the structure that this team plays with. They play well in the offensive zone. This is a team that generally controls possession, as well as just about any other team in the league. He's been helped out by that, but also has been making big saves, good saves when needed and called upon. Jonathan Quick is one of the most athletic and exciting goaltenders in the league. And when you look at this Kings team this coming year, just because of having lost Milan Lucic to the Edmonton Oilers, of course, Teddy Purcell and several other players should hope to step up and by committee fill in some of that production. The Kings are going to need an equally, if not better, strong year from Quick, just because they're going to have to win a lot of those 2-1 games if they're going to want to remain a playoff team this coming year.
So, John, right now over in California, you guys are doing your training camp. What kind of fan response do you get to the training camps? Do they show up to watch the scrimmages and that sort of thing? And further with that, are the fans holding the team, their feet to the fire? Is there an expectation that this team will compete for a Stanley Cup again this year?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate to say that. Of course, when you win a couple of Stanley Cups there, that raises the types of expectations. It increases and widens the scope of the fan base. And, you get people that might not have been there, for the first 40 to 45 years of futility that now have these expectations that, might not have been met in most Kings seasons. But people come out. There will be a good crowd out here at training camp today. They should probably fill the stands at Toyota Sports Center, which is about 800 people here. It's an interesting time of the year in the States. I don't get the sense right now that, the World Cup of Hockey is something that the average American sports fan is really kind of keying in on right now, especially when you have baseball late in the season. College football starting up. There's obviously an NFL team now in Los Angeles. I think they're going through Though there is somewhat of a honeymoon, you don't get the sense that the Rams right now have really latched on permanently to this L.A. Sports scene. Just speaking anecdotally, you don't see a lot of Rams gear out in public. L.A. is kind of a unique sports city, though. It's not quite like a place like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Boston or New York, where you're going to see a lot of people wearing their team's colors every single day as part of their wardrobe. Mm-hmm. But, yes, the Kings absolutely have their niche. They'll sell out every single game this season. And they get good attendance for these training camps, especially on the weekends. On a yesterday weekday, there weren't going to be a ton of people there. But, you know, the scope has been widened. People are very interested. There are more casual fans of the Kings. And, you know, just the typical L.A. sports fan is cognizant that the Kings have been through this championship window. And L.A. sports fans will support a winner. That's what they're looking for. You know, they're not always going to be supporting a team that is at the bottom of their championship cycle. But this is a very popular team right now, and they're looking to continue to sustain that here in their 50th anniversary season.
John Rosen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's, of course, the LA Kings insider. He's also the rinkside reporter for Fox Sports West. John, you know, we were talking about in the previous segment about the Los Angeles Kings and about sort of their roster makeup. And if you're talking about top-end talent, they're probably the envy of a lot of teams in the NHL. Anze Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Drew Doughty, Jake Muzzin, Jonathan Quick. Every single general manager in the NHL would take that those five players as their best five players. The problem for the Kings is in that secondary, the bottom six forward group, the bottom pairing, the defense. Is it good enough? Is that bottom six and the bottom pairing, are they good enough to compete with the best teams in the Western Conference?
It hasn't been from a production standpoint the last 2 years. From a structure, playing without the puck, limiting scoring opportunities, playing that possession game, they've been fine. But that shooting percentage hasn't been there. And again, they haven't transferred that into just cold, hard production. I mean, when you look at the second Stanley Cup that the team went through, that was like Mike Richards, even though, you know, his production was in a little bit of a decline right then at that point in his career, he was still absolutely fine taking on a fourth line center role. And that was a player who, you know, in the high 20 points, you know, somebody that you could, I believe, you know, 14, 15 goals that year in a fourth line center role. And that's something that you look at the playoff run, the Kings were averaging nearly three goals a game during that playoff run. So they don't have that right now. There are some players that do have some potential to be able to provide that secondary scoring. I know the team is expecting a big year this year from Tanner Pearson, who has the potential to be a guy that can pot you 20 to 25 goals. Played his first full NHL season last year. He was injured 2 years ago, actually, in a game at home against Winnipeg. He's somebody that has the potential to raise his production. I think Marian Gaborik, though he is more of a, of course, top six player, is somebody that can raise that production. I think it's going to be a little bit too much to ask to expect Dustin Brown to kind of double his production, you know, from what it has been in the last couple of years. And then you get to some of the younger players that can try and vie for a little bit of an increased role. Nick Shore has been a productive player in the minor leagues, in college, hasn't really translated yet into the NHL. He led the entire league in just raw Corsi 4 this past year. So he plays well in the offensive zone. If he continues to generate scoring chances, he should see his production increase a little bit. But that's clearly one of the things that this Kings team has to improve this year, getting more regular production from the bottom six. You know, I think Teddy Purcell probably could be a third-line type guy who could generate some of that this year for this Kings team. And also, you know, that comes from the back end, too. The Kings are getting pretty good production from their blue liners, obviously having Jake Muzzin, Drew Doughty on this team. Alec Martinez has one of the hardest and most accurate shots on this Kings team, too. So they've had a very good power play. Their defensemen have been able to contribute on that power play, too. But that's going to be a big question this year. Can they maintain the type of production that they've had, even though Milan Lucic isn't on the team and several of their top-end guys are, you know, I'm speaking mostly of Gaborik, and some of the others are a year or two older.
John, Team USA's performance at the World Cup of Hockey, I think you would agree, was very disappointing. And Kings general manager Dean Lombardi and Team USA general manager Dean Lombardi is taking a lot of criticism. What do you think of Team USA's performance and the criticism that Dean Lombardi is getting for not selecting certain players, whether that's a guy like Phil Kessel or a Tyler Johnson?
You know, I think that any team, you can look at the fringes of the roster and find players that could or could not be on there. I think even for Canada's team, you know, there were questions, why is Jake Muzzin on this team as opposed to someone like Chris Letang or PK Subban. But, you know, that being said, Phil Kessel might not be one of those French-type players. He was a point-of-game player a couple years ago, I believe, back in Sochi. And then there's also another question, something that I don't think was really raised that much when he tweeted out that fire tweet the other night. You know, is that somebody, and again, we're going into the intangible, and maybe this is wrong, I'm just throwing it out there, but is somebody who would tweet that out, that could be interpreted as throwing some other players onto the bus, guys that might not have otherwise been on the team. I know the team was pretty ticked off by that tweet. You know, is that somebody that you should have brought along? Just throwing that out there. I personally think Phil Kessel would have been fine, especially for a team that is going to need a little bit more scoring. But, you know, I get the sense right now, you know, that the kind of referendum that has been placed on this USA team is that it's just focusing on grit rather than skill. And I think that's a little bit overly simplistic. To win in hockey, there are so many criteria that go into creating a winning team. And for an NHL team where you have a longer season, a winning culture, building winning consistently. You know, you have to have buy-in under a coach. You have to have excellent structure. You have to have excellent organizational detail down to practice habits, travel habits, nutrition and conditioning habits. You have to be a strong possession team. Absolutely, you have to have good skill, and that's becoming more apparent. You have to play well without the puck, and when you have the puck, you have to get it up ice quickly. You have to get a lot from your top players, and you know it helps to be built from the back end out with a strong goaltender and a very good defense led by a heavy minutes eater. I don't know if all of this is applicable in such a short tournament, but certainly as terms of team construction in the NHL, these are all things that if you can check off all those boxes, lead to winning. So I think it's a little bit overly simplistic just to say that the team favored grit over skill. I think there was a lot of focus placed on just beating Canada, and maybe as a result the team didn't have its best outing just because they were so focused on beating the Canadians when this tournament actually opened and they were facing Team Europe. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a changeover. We'll see what happens with USA Hockey as it relates to future international tournaments. But there's going to be a little bit of introspection and soul searching going on as USA Hockey moves forward.
John, I'll let you go on this last question. The previous question was about Dean Lombardi, Team USA general manager. This one's about Dean Lombardi, Los Angeles Kings general manager. As we stand here today, I believe the Kings have about $30,000 in projected salary cap space entering the start of the 2016-17 season. Is that an area that Lombardi is going to look to address, you know, during this training camp? Maybe try and get somebody to take one of his contracts off their hands and sweeten the pot a little bit, like we've seen the Carolina Hurricanes use their salary cap space and get a player or get a draft pick as a result of being willing to take someone else's problem? Or is Dean Lombardi so used to now not having any salary cap space, it's not an especially big concern of his as the season begins?
Well, the team is really in a tough space there because not only do they have a lot of cap space, you know, they don't have an excellent prospect core to be able to, you know, if you want to entice a team to take one of its larger contracts. They just don't have the type of prospect that they would be willing to part with to be able to do so. The top prospect in the team, certainly the top offensive prospect, is Adrian Kempe. He'll most likely, 98% be a return to Ontario this year. But after that, just because the team has been looking to maintain its position competitively at or near the top of the NHL standing, they've traded away quite a few prospects. You've seen Roland McEwen, Valentin Zhikov go over to Carolina. There have been other players that have been exchanged to try and bring in players that continue to keep the Kings where they have been. So it's going to be a challenge. You look over the summer, there were just no takers for Dustin Brown's contract. That was a player that the Kings explored possibilities with other teams, but nothing made sense to this Kings team. So moving forward, their best hope right now is that they get a little bit more out of Brown this coming year. So it's a tough spot for Lombardi. But this is just a reality of salary cap hockey in the modern NHL, where Gary Bettman, and this team, for no fault, don't mean to, place any, negative onus on him right here. They want to see a lot of changeover. That's why you haven't seen a repeat Stanley Cup champion since 1998. Mm-hmm. They want to at least give the illusion that every single team has an opportunity to win every single year. And so with the salary cap, it's hard to stay on top like that. It's why you might see even a team like Chicago, which is a little bit better positioned just because of having won three Stanley Cups in its original six status and, a prime destination for college-based and junior-based free agents to sign with and provide some, less expensive contracts. You might see them you know, this year or next year miss out in the playoffs at the expense of a team like Winnipeg, which should be coming on strong once again. So it's interesting, but it's a little bit of a tight spot. It's not an easy position, not an envious position there for Dean Lombardi, but, you know, he has made very good, shrewd moves, especially early on in this Kings cycle that he'll look to try and replicate here, because the Kings, you would think right there, probably on the cusp of being a playoff team, a 100-point team a year ago, so it's certainly they have a base already from which to work with, and as you guys mentioned, they do have some very good top-end talent, but it's hard to stay at the top once you've been up there.
John Rosen is the LA Kings insider. He's the rinkside reporter for Fox Sports West as well. John, really appreciate your time and your insight this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure, John. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
A little off-air Toronto Blue Jays analysis happening here in studio as we prepare for Game 2 of the key Jays-Yankees series, a game you can hear on TSN 1290, split up in between the Blue Bomber Game Day, which gets underway at 1 p.m., and so in about a little more than an hour, Walby, Westwood, and Bombing invade the studio here, get you set for the Bombers and the Stampeders, the measuring stick game at in Calgary, and of course we'll intersplice that with the Jays game as well, as the Jays and the Yankees do battle the second of a four-game set at well, I don't need to name the name of the stadium they play at Sky Dome. How about that?
Drew, you've probably heard of the Edwing, but have you heard of the Eswing?
That's you eating a lot of just a giant chicken wing, I assume.
I would assume just
exactly
getting a chicken wing lodged in his throat.
Both correct.
Both correct. It's you and chicken wings, and that's pretty much
little
what
known fact. Ezzy and I saw Edwing had a homer this season.
Yeah, that's
as
true.
You guys, well, I don't know. That's little known, but maybe little cared. That's for sure. But as you guys were on your way to draft in Buffalo,
yeah.
Did they win that game?
Yeah, J.A. Happ.
Ah,
afternoon game.
20 game winner.
I think it was his 14th win or something. Like
yeah, well, yeah. 20 game winner now. J.A. Happ has proven to be, you know, props to, you know, people were a little bit upset when they didn't go out and pay any money for David Price, who's struggled with Boston but has been good lately with Boston. But J.A. Happ has been fantastic for
Couldn't
the Jays.
Couldn't he win the Cy Young?
He could. I don't think he's going to. I think what's his name on Boston's going to get it. Ricky Nolasco? No, that's not who it is. It's
Curt Schilling.
Shoot, I can't remember off the top. I'll have to look it up.
I'll never forget Curt Schilling's bloody sock.
It's, you know, that was Rick Porcello was his name. I knew it wasn't Ricky Nolasco, but I knew I got the Rick part. Rick Porcello, of course, formerly of the Detroit Tigers, I believe, is where he came over from. J.A. Happ second, right behind Porcello, likely in the Cy Young voting, but who knows at that point in time. The Jays and the Yankees later on today on TSN 1290, that key series as they gear up for the playoffs. They are sort of playoff. It's a great time to be a sports fan. NFL underway. Jays heading to the playoffs, playoff picture, getting reeled down to the nitty-gritty NHL training camp. Lots going on. The Bombers and, you know, their seven-game winning streak on the line today in Calgary. Tons of stuff for the average sports fan to pay attention to.
There's no more summer at all.
I'm going with the Bombers, Drew. Okay. I'm going to pick the Bombers by a field goal.
Really?
Because the Stampeders have an excellent team, arguably the best team in the CFL, maybe aside from the Bombers right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go out on a whim. I'm going to take the
a
Vikings.
A whim or a limb?
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're going to go, you know.
First of all, you shouldn't be going out on any limbs.
Yeah, that limb's going to break. You know, rock-a-bye baby, down goes the Ezzy. But you're going to go out on a limb is what you're going
to
say.
That's what I meant to say.
Or you have a whim. I mean, you know.
Bombers and I'm going to take your Vikings in a huge upset over Carolina.
Okay. No AP, no problem.
The bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off
but,
for
But I want to give, I don't know what that
it's
was.
It's my lock there, of the week,
I want to give props to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. I should mention that.
Yes.
Give props to the Gold Eyes for winning the American Association Championship earlier in the week.
Yeah, big props. Andrew Collier, Rick Forney,
the
whole
entire Gold Eyes
Gold Eyes staff. Also, shout out to Bob Cole, who got Order of Canada this week.
Yeah, that's also a well-deserved honor for Bob Cole, of course, one of the probably the broadcaster of our generation, if you will. Dave, you are more of a Danny Galvin generation, I believe.
Age growth jokes.
Yeah, an age joke at your expense, huh? Turnabout is fair play on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's it for this Saturday morning. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to the guests that joined us today, John Rosen of the LA Kings, Kristen Odlin of the Calgary Herald. We also had Paul Wiesick of the Winnipeg Free Press and Marty Biron, TSN hockey analyst. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Props to Rory doing his great job. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Stay tuned for Blue Bomber Game Day coming up in 1 hour's time here on your home of sports in Winnipeg, TSN 1290.